We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your host, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up and welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 83. The Yankees are about to play Sunday Night Baseball. They have dropped the first two against the Red Sox. This was supposed to be the quote-unquote most important stretch of the season for the Yankees when they were going to decide if they were going to be sellers or buyers or potentially just do nothing. And what do they do out of the All-Star break? They look like absolute crap, come out flat like they're still sleepwalking, like they're all still on their Caribbean vacation since not many of them made the All-Star game. Scott, how you doing?
I'm good because I had a very, very strong feeling this exact situation was going to happen tonight. I mean, this is obviously a day after. You guys are hearing this on Monday. Tanaka versus Price tonight. We'll see what happens. Yankees historically have hit Price well, and you know he never really shows up that greatly against the Yankees, so we'll see what happens tonight. But I'm not really expecting a great outcome. Tanaka's been very average over his last few starts, and like you said, the Yankees came out completely flat after they had 4 to 5 days off. You'd think that these old guys rest their bones, ready to go. No, they hit a knuckleballer in the first outing and just completely get shut down. So it's kind of going to the way I thought it was going to go, because I feel like this is going to be the very, very big deciding factor for the ownership to finally say, hey, this team is not good, and we need to get rid of the assets that we have and re-freaking load.
But here's the catch. Tanaka's going on an extra couple days rest, and we know how good he can be when he's got that extra rest. So it wouldn't surprise me if he pitches, you know, seven and a third innings, really good ball tonight, and the Yankees squeak out a 4-1 victory or something like that. Just to tease the fans enough and to tease ownership enough where it's like, oh, maybe this team isn't complete garbage.
Well, I think it's a big – actually, tonight, now that you're saying that, because I forgot about the extra rest, it's going to be interesting because we know Tanaka's at his best on extra rest. And this Red Sox lineup, you know they're going to put out their A lineup tonight. And it's going to be a very big test for him to see if this extra day, this extra 2 days is really what drives him, because I think he's going to get one of his bigger tests this year. Because this lineup, the lineup on the Red Sox is pretty filthy.
It's, you know, so funny. It's,
and they're young and fast, which is not very Red Sox-like.
I was at the game on Friday night, first game I went to all season, and the Yankee Stadium scoreboard has both lineups up there the whole game, and I overheard somebody sitting a couple seats down from me commenting on how the averages of all of the Red Sox players were so much higher than the Yankees players. Every Yankees player is hovering in the 240, 250, and then you even got, you know, Teixeira in there who's still batting under 200, and you look at the Red Sox lineup and it's 308, 335, 319, 296. It's night and day how much better the Red Sox offense is. And we knew that going into the season that the Red Sox were probably going to mash the ball. Pitching was going to be their question. They've done some things in the last couple weeks to make their pitching rotation overall better. David Price going tonight, and he's had such a weird season, because if you look at his overall, you know,
he's leading the American League in strikeouts, I think.
Exactly. I was just going to say that. You look at the traditional numbers, the win-loss record and the ERA, it looks pretty bad. And he's got like a 4.6 ERA for a guy making $27 million or whatever crazy number he's making. That's horrible. But his strikeouts are up there, and it's just when he does get hit, he gives up big hits. So, you know, some people might say that trend means he's going to start to pitch better in the second half of the season. I guess we'll see.
I get frustrated because of all these new stats that are coming out. People, I feel like, kind of disregard and throw away the batting average a lot more now than they used to, just because it's so much more acceptable to drive in runs and have a low batting average. And I mean, you know how I feel about that in the sense that I can't stand that type of baseball, the scoring only in lump sums and not getting consistent by getting guys on base and getting them over and getting them in. Like, that's the kind of baseball I love. And when you're looking at the Red Sox lineup, like, I really like the construction of their lineup, the way that they have it with their speed guys, the guys that get on base quite a bit. And you look at the Yankees lineup, it's like the worst possible thing for me to watch as an offense, because it's because there are so many slumps, and we see that. I mean, with the amount of streaking this team does, I mean, when you're hot and the ball's going out of the park, you have success, or moderate success for this year. But in the past, they've had a lot more success because they've had a couple table setters that have gotten on, and then the big guys would actually hit. But when you have big guys who are supposed to hit and drive in runs don't, you see what's happening, and you have much longer streaks of bad baseball. And that's what's going on now, because the guys that are supposed to thump in the middle of the lineup are not doing anything remotely close to that. You mentioned Teixeira under 200. I think he's at 280. I'm sorry. I think he's at 187 or 186 since he's been back from the injury too. So it's not like we've seen anything better. He added a couple home runs to give us a little bit of window dressing, but he's been terrible since he's gotten back too. He does not deserve to be out there. And have you seen Rob Refsnyder play since the break?
No, I have not.
Neither have I. And it's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. The one freaking catalyst on this team, when you have to win starting out and you have to start out hot after this break, you don't play your probably most consistent hitter next to Carlos Beltran on this team, because that's what he is. It's ridiculous. It's and maybe it's just because Girardi wants to show ownership what this team really is. And if that's the case, I'm okay with it.
That would certainly be next level managing by Joe Girardi.
That's a serious conspiracy.
Something theory, right? That I'm not quite sure he's capable of.
Cashman and Girardi, two stalls, like, you know, can you spare square type thing? talking. Hey, guess what? I'm not going to play Refsnyder. We're not going to score any runs. You're going to get your way.
It's beautiful. I would actually respect the hell out of that.
That'd be amazing. That'd be a great story to leak.
You mentioned that the Yankees, what I think you were alluding to is the fact that the Yankees offense is not versatile and the Red Sox offense is versatile. And what I mean by that is the Red Sox can score in a number of different ways. If it's let's hit five home runs tonight and win 9-2, the Red Sox can do that. If they need to scratch out a couple runs by hitting and running and going first to third, they can do that. Or they can put up 9 hits, 10 hits in a game because they got a bunch of 300 hitters on the team. The Yankees only score, when the Yankees win games and score more than 5 runs, you know exactly how it's going to happen. The Ellsbury and Gardner are going to get on base probably twice in the game, and Carlos Beltran's going to have a big hit. That's literally the only freaking way the Yankees win and score runs.
And you're talking about the versatility of the fact, but the problem, the thing that you don't see from their team is very many games where they are shut out. I mean, even in those big home run games, you're still getting on base and getting hits. These guys, when you load a bunch of 300 hitters on a team, you're first of all, your percentages are a hell of a lot higher to score runs because you got guys on base. And you have guys squaring up the ball and doing good things with the baseball, hitting it where they want, spraying it around the field. That's the other thing. Jackie Bradley Jr., I'm pretty sure it was Saturday or Friday. I might be confusing the game. But they shifted on him 3 times. And 3 times, he went the other way. He went the other way because he saw what they were giving him, and he went with what the defense gave him, and he got on base. It's just simple things like that this team cannot do. You have Teixeira in there talking about, everybody's talking about, oh, he's going to hit it over the shift, not away from the shift. Well, guess what? Guess what, bro? You're hitting freaking 186. Hit away from the shift. Lay a bunt down. You don't have power right now. So this is not an excuse. It's utterly ridiculous how stuck in the mud they are with their offensive game plans, and they will not move around from it. It's craziness. It's craziness.
We came out of the gate hot on this one.
Jesus, man. Yeah, fired up. I didn't even think. I thought we were going to be dead. I've been playing golf all day.
You got a little sunburn.
Yeah.
Yeah, a little red forehead from the sun.
But now we're talking about it. It's firing me up. You know what I think it is? It's because deep down inside, I truly do hate the Red Sox. And the fact that they are such a better team, and I look at that roster, and it's just so much more attractive, you know, as an offense and even their defense, their outfield's filthy. It's very frustrating when you look at these two teams, because while the rivalry is not there, I still have that deep down heart and hatred that's like ready to blow at any point. And obviously just talking about it makes me upset. So,
and part of it is the fact that I'm envious of Red Sox fans right now. They just made a big trade for Drew Pomeranz, and they're in this race. They're in it to win it this year. They have the next 2 months, 2+ months of baseball. It's going to be so exciting for them, even if they don't make the playoffs or lose in the wild card game like the Yankees did last year. At least you're looking forward to something every night, good baseball to watch every night. What, as Yankee fans, do we have to look forward to right now? Everyone's just sitting on their hands on pins and needles waiting for August 1st deadline to see what the Yankees do. That's literally the only thing that Yankee fans have going for them right now.
We're not even looking for, like, it doesn't matter if somebody gets hurt. Only unless it's Carlos Beltran and he's a trade chip.
Yeah,
and
one of the...
Like, ooh, if Teixeira's going to get hurt, ooh, if A-Rod's going to get hurt, I really could care less. I really don't care. It doesn't matter.
It sucks to feel that way because, and as Yankee fans, we have not felt that way very often in the last 25 years. And 2013 and 2014, we didn't even feel that way, even though the team wasn't very good. At least they were, at this point, I feel like those seasons, they were in it more than they are now.
But it's a different mentality right now. I feel like it's a totally different mindset and just feeling for this team, because we have no idea where the direction is. Nobody is being clear on the direction. There's 15 voices talking about what's going to happen, what's not going to happen, and nobody's saying the same thing. It's like inside the organization, they're not on the same page. And that right there is extremely frustrating and disconcerting, because you've had all this time. You know what's happening with these guys. You knew damn well that they were going to lull, and at the end of their contracts are probably going to be not slowing down, but a cliff. At that age, guys don't slow down as much as they – if you look at the percentage of these, the majority of these guys drop off of a cliff. That's usually what happens, unless there are steroids involved in your body. That's what happens, and that's exactly what's happening right now with Teixeira, happening with A-Rod. Beltran obviously isn't there yet. The guy's still – I mean, he's been a machine his whole career. I could see him hitting for his entire career, no matter what he slows down. But, oh, man, it's frustrating.
And well, I'll we know. It's
you touched on Red Sox fans, too. I played golf with a good buddy of mine who's a Red Sox fan from New Hampshire. And I told him one thing today. It was like, we were getting our asses kicked on Friday and Saturday, and I don't even get a text message from you giving me shit. I get nothing. And it pisses me off because – like, I want to feel that emotion back. Like, I want you to talk shit to me. And there's two reasons why they haven't. One, they're spoiled now. They got spoiled. They no longer care. They no longer are so desperately needing a championship anymore.
Right, they're no longer the little brother.
Yeah, that it doesn't really matter as much anymore. They're not as fired up. They're not as eager to, like, pick a fight with me or defend themselves. And two, we are so irrelevant right now that it just doesn't matter that we sweat them, because you expect it. Well, and right. That sucks too.
That's how the Red Sox were the last couple years. Take out 2013 when the Red Sox won the World Series. They've been a basement dweller. And that Yankee-Red Sox rivalry is 6 feet under at this point.
I know it is.
They haven't met in the playoffs.
It's not even there with like, he's one of my very good friends. It's not even there with us. And when it's like the most heated.
I was at a Yankee Red Sox game, obviously on Friday night at the stadium, and it seemed like it was a spring training game. That was the atmosphere. There was more Red Sox fans in the stadium than anything. But I miss going to games where it's literally yelling matches between fans the entire nine innings, because we hate each other so much and the action on the field is good. I mean, we know the Yankees and Red Sox haven't met in the playoffs since 2004, and that's a big factor. Between 1999 and 2004, they met in the championship series three times. They played so often, and it was pretty much a 500 against each other record for those teams. I mean, it was so heated. You could never top that. But they haven't played in the playoffs in 12 years at this point. So that's a distant memory. And as soon as David Ortiz retires on the Red Sox and A-Rod, who's pretty much a non-factor at this point, there's no one left from those years.
It's true. Speaking of the Yankees and Red Sox, we got to dedicate this show.
Oh, look at that. Look at that transition by you. This is show 83. This is show number 83. So we're going to go with our dedication for this is Roger Clemens, because as the career number of victories he had in Yankee pinstripes is 83. And Roger Clemens, I think a lot of people, a lot of baseball fans probably hate, but I think Yankee fans still like the Rocket.
Yeah, he's obviously one of the more polarizing figures at this point. I mean, he's like the poster boy for steroids for pitchers, I think, right? Like, I think Bonds is the guy for hitters. Clemens to me is the guy for
because he put up the most gaudy numbers in well into his 40s.
And he threw a bat at Mike Piazza.
you look at his career stats, and he basically had three different mini careers. And they weren't even that mini. He had his late 80s, early 90s with the Red Sox, and then he had his mid 90s with the Blue Jays and Yankees, and then he had his 2000s with the Yankees and the Astros. And it was three very distinct periods where he was dominant, and I think won a Cy Young in all of those places. He won a Cy Young. He won one with the Astros, yes. Mm.
Yeah, it's tough to come back when you have documented roid rage on a big stage. And it's just so clear when you look back at what happened that he was this dude was just jacked up. And, I don't know, because there's other things about Roger Clemens, too. I think Yankee fans like him just because obviously he performed well. But then there's also the Andy Pettit connection. I feel like people are a little bit iffy on, just because Pettit had the HGH. And I think a lot of people really you know, put that on Clemens' influence.
Yeah.
Isn't, you know, a lot of people do.
Isn't it funny that people blame Clemens for Andy Pettit using HGH?
It's true, but it's very true.
Good for Andy Pettit for sneaking that around fans. He just apologized, said he made a mistake. Yeah, I used it one or two times. I love Andy Pettit, but let's be realistic. Of course,
well, that's
he used
because
it
Andy
more
Pettit's
than one
nice,
or two times.
He doesn't seem like
right,
the guy
he's a good,
who owned
he's
up
a good
to
Southern
it.
Boy.
He was also the first guy to own up to it, I think. He was one of the first
one
guys
the
to
first
actually
guys,
be,
yep.
be honest. I mean, while I don't believe he was 100% honest, he was at least enough honest with everybody to say, hey, I made a mistake. I regret it. I'm going to come back to it. I love Jesus. You know what I mean? Like, and that's
Clemens
where he went.
Was way too stubborn, way too full of himself to ever admit that he did
yeah,
anything.
He's still doing it. He's still going through that. So, well, a couple things before we continue on the show. I have some Bronx Pinstripe things I want to talk about. And if you haven't seen on the show, we're doing a special segment, which I'm really excited about. Especially, you should be really excited about this too, everybody listening, because there's not much to look at this team right now until we make some trades, hopefully, and see some young guys come up. But what we're doing, 20-year anniversary, we all know, is the celebration at Yankee Stadium is going to be on the 13th. The Bronx Pinstripes team is going to be there. That's our annual team outing. We're definitely going to get together before the game. So if you are a listener, you're going to be at the game. We would love for you to meet up with us. I'm actually going to be calling a bunch of bars this week, getting an area where we can all meet up, and we'll post it everywhere. Come hang out with us. Come meet us. It'd be awesome to talk to you guys and meet everybody in real life, and, you know, just then talking to you on Twitter and Facebook and all these places. So definitely do that. And then also, we're doing the 96 Relive 96, Relive 1996 segment on Bronx Pinstripes. And I think we've had three games go up. We started on Friday. We're documenting every single game. In the second half of the year, it's going to be a game recap. So you can kind of read through it, see exactly what happened on that day. It's really good.
It's Rich really Kaufman's cool because they're written like it's 1996 and exactly. The game just happened. So it is kind of like a flashback. The ebbs and flows. We're going to be doing the games that the Yankees won, which they won a hell of a lot of games at the second half of 1996, but also the games they lose. So you can kind of go with how the team was trending in 1996. And especially for someone like me, I'm so interested to read all these recaps because I was 8 years old in 1996. I remember watching the playoffs, but I don't remember a damn thing really from the second half of that season.
Well, it's funny. It's funny because I was talking with we have a guy that does it, that interns with us, Justin, who does a lot of he works with us on the podcast too. And I was talking with him last week, and I was like, you know, I'm curious as to how you think about this, and because you obviously he's younger. He's a lot younger, and he was like, I think 3 years old when in 96. And I was like, is this something interesting to you? You know, I'm 36 years old. I was 16 at the time. So I was kind of in my like sports fandom prime, you know, as like a kid. And, you know, he was telling me how interested he is because he didn't live through it. So now he can kind of read it and see how everything went. If you look at Jeter's average now,
I was just going to mention that.
Yeah, I think he's hitting 278 at this point, and he ended the season at what, 330?
So what it was, I was looking at that first recap of July 15th, 1996, and in the box score, Jeter's average was 280. And I was saying to myself, damn, I thought Jeter had a much higher batting average his rookie season. I mean, he won the Rookie of the Year. And I looked it up, he finished at 314 because he hit 350 in the second half.
Yeah.
So he carried the team in the second half.
Yeah, so it's really interesting. And some of the names when we're looking back that I completely forgot about, and just some of the position players, the utility guys that they had on that team, it's fun to look back. So definitely check that out. We're doing them every morning. They're going out at 9 o'clock, and you should be able to get them. They're
ignore
on the site.
Ignore the 2016 game recaps because it's just going to depress the hell out of you. Still click on the article, but then just go right to the 1996 game and read something a little bit more, something that'll make you feel a little bit better throughout your day.
There's still good information in the 2016 ones. We'll obviously go through everything. And then the other thing that we're doing, we've had a couple up. One of our editors and writers, RJ Lubier, is writing a series called Bronx Tales. And we really want to get a lot. If you're listening to the show, Andrew and I were kind of talking about doing this as a podcast as well, getting people on the show and like getting their accounts of good fan stories. And maybe it'll eventually turn into that. But for now, what we're doing is we're doing an article series of it. And they've been good so far. We had a guy who met Jeter out in California, a little kid getting his first foul ball. We have a couple. We have the Bat Boy coming up. Here's a sneak preview. We have the Bat Boy from one of the Bat Boys from 1996 coming on. It's going to be writing something. And the guy who is in the bleachers who rings the cowbell. His first year was 1996 as well. So we're going to get a lot of these like fan stories. I think it's a lot of fun. Obviously, we're a fan community, and that's really who we relate to the most. and we want to highlight a lot of your guys' stories. So if you have a good story, shoot us an email, info@BronxPinstripes, or ping me or Andrew on Twitter, and definitely get it to us, and I'll hook you up with RJ so we can get those going. So
maybe there's a lady out there who had a late night encounter with Derek Jeter.
Oh,
wants to share about that.
Are we talking about a potential gift basket scenario?
Yeah. Or maybe she wasn't even lucky enough to get a gift basket, but she at least got maybe a kiss on the cheek.
Like a Stonewall? She was looking for the gift basket?
He called her a black car because, you know, Jeter doesn't call taxis and there was no Uber back then.
Right. So. Yeah, you never know. There's a lot of things. There's a lot of things that could be coming out. So definitely get them in. We'd love to. I know we're getting some from the Yankees. There's the Women's Yankees Fantasy Camp too, which I was not 100%. I didn't know about that.
That reminds me of when Kramer went to fantasy baseball.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot he had it. Who do you punch?
Mickey Mantle.
Mickey Mantle, yeah. Nice.
Because Joe Pepitone was crowding the plate, and he had to buzz him.
He had to buzz him.
Oh, hilarious. All right. We kind of talked, we got right into it at the beginning of the episode, but the Yankees came out of the All-Star break flat, and it's no longer, we know what this team is at this point because it's not we know what the trend is. If you look back until August 1st of 2015, this team is a total of 4 games under .500. That's a full season pretty much worth of slightly under .500 baseball. So it's no longer a surprise that the Yankees are just not a very good team. It's a largely the same roster. If anything, you could argue the Yankees roster on paper to start 2016 was better than the roster they finished with in 2015. Wouldn't you say so?
Yeah. The only thing you're not going to see on paper is the another year older
Mark
for
Teixeira,
A-Rod,
breaking down Teixeira. Alex Rodriguez not having a good season, of course. But yeah. But we went into the season with extremely high hopes, and we thought that this team could not only compete for the division, but if they made it to the playoffs, they were going to be an extremely dangerous team because of the bullpen.
Right.
But we've seen them they struggle to even get to the sixth inning in a tied game or one-run lead. So it's really just 95% of this team is incapable of winning baseball games.
I don't even know where to add to that. Yes, it's frustrating to watch it. And we did think that there was a lot that on paper looking at, with the addition of Castro, obviously second base was a giant hole last year, and bringing in Castro, was thought to bring some stability, and it has. I don't think he's been as good as we expected, and he's
got off
tailed off.
Really hot start.
Yeah, yeah. And we'll see what happens in the second half. Last year, he was a totally different player in the second half than he was in the first half. He led baseball in the batting average, hitting like .360 in the second half. So we'll see if he can make another adjustment. And again, he is, the first time in the American League too. So you have to also expect, a surge and then a lull because
right. He needs to
in the beginning.
Out.
Yeah, the pictures that he figures it out, pitchers figure him out. Now it's back on him to make another adjustment and
before
see where
it
is.
Before you move on from Castro, I want to ask you a question.
Yeah.
Do you worry about his mental makeup that maybe if he's on a .500 team, he's not fully checked into every game? I mean, the Cubs were on a tear last season in the second half. They were making a playoff push. Castro was dialed in. He was hitting .330. Do you think maybe on a team with how the Yankees are playing now or how we saw the Cubs playing over the last three seasons before last year, where he's kind of not always 100% there every night?
I mean, he's a three-time All-Star in the National League, too, on bad teams.
Eduardo Nunez made the All-Star team this year. Everyone needs to have an All-Star, Scott.
I get that. So, I can't really say that I think that's the case because I haven't seen anything that really gives it to me.
I worry about that a little bit.
I mean, I just haven't seen anything. I haven't seen that in his everyday play that makes me think that. So, I don't know if he's,
he's
just going through the motions at this point. I don't
sometimes.
Know. I don't.
Sometimes he goes up to the plate, swings at the first couple pitches. They're not even close to the plate. It kind of looks like he's not 100% invested in the at-bat.
Right. I also think that's him just being too much of a free swinger at that time, and he just gets completely lost after two strikes sometimes.
Right. So I think that – so the Yankees were 44-44 at the All-Star break, and if they realistically wanted to have a chance to make the wild card, they were going to need 88 wins on the season. Because that would put them right in the mix for what the last few seasons the wild card team had made and also what the current wild card teams were projected to win, which means they would have had to go 44-30 in the second half, 14 games over .500. For a team that I just mentioned has been four games under .500 since the second half of last season, that just seems entirely unrealistic.
Yeah, it's just not going to happen. And the reason is because this first 10-game stretch is going to bury us, and then we're going to sell everybody.
And they're playing also a bunch. They played. They had their June schedule was so easy, and they just could not take advantage of it. They played a 7 or 8-game stretch where all they played was the Rockies and the Twins, and they went 500 in that. So you're telling me when they play the Red Sox and the Blue Jays and the Giants, they're going to go 8-2? It's just not going to freaking happen.
Yeah, I said this before, and it really would not surprise me if they were to sell – let's just say they sold Beltran. Let's say they sold Chapman and maybe one other guy, and they got some return and they got some guys who are ready to play now. It literally would not faze me and not shock me if they started playing better with younger guys ready to show what they have.
Yeah.
And then seeing kind of a little bit of a youth resurgence in this team, because I in the past we've seen teams that teams gel very well. You know, we had guys like John Ryan Murphy who seemed like it was – he brought like a youthful exuberance and energy to the team. And there was something there almost that I think A-Rod really – it seemed like they were always together. There was like a youthful – to me, this team is just – they don't look like they're having fun. They don't look like they're gelling well together. Everybody kind of looks like they're getting a paycheck and going home. And I don't know. It doesn't seem like there's any chemistry on this team either. You start bringing in some younger guys. There's a little bit more energy feeding in the dugout. I could see guys like Ellsbury playing better. I could see other guys starting to pick it up a little bit more, and this team actually playing better. So I honestly think that it could be a shot in the arm if they actually made these trades too. And on paper, we'd be not as good, but see an uptick.
You remember how the Red Sox played in September of last year?
Yes, I do.
They were on fire.
They were.
And it took the Yankees, I think, what was it? Didn't they have to really squeak? Didn't they? It was a 4-game series late in the season. The Yankees were trying to clinch the wild card, and they only won one game from the Red Sox because the Red Sox were playing spoilers and was with a bunch of young guys who are now really performing for them.
Yeah. And their offense in the second half was just on fire. I mean, their whole, I want to say the majority of the second half, the Red Sox offense was really good last year. And they started chasing themselves up. It was almost to a point where they're almost making it, like on the cusp of making a run and then hit a long losing streak. But yeah, you see it not only for that, like you see guys gelling at the same time, but the fact that they're getting the major league experience. I mean, you're seeing what has happened now and the positives that have hit Boston because these guys have experience. I mean, Jackie Bradley Jr. Has been set down already. You know
what
I mean?
Like, he had the worst start to any major league career in history. He went something like 400 plus at bats with an OPS of under 300. You remember how Chase Headley was in the first 2 months of the season? That's what Jackie Bradley Jr. was for the first like season of his career. And now all of a sudden he's an all-star.
They brought him up and he took his lumps and he came back, and that's when you see what kind of a player he is. Because a lot of guys struggle in the beginning and then they have to kind of dig down and find out who they are again, make sure the moment's not too big for them, find out what got them there in the first place, and then go back out. And that's what he did. And you can see, obviously, he's a totally different player at this point. Guy had the freaking longest hit streak in how many years? And he is, you know, he's an all-star. He's a phenomenal player and he's going to be there for many years to come. And you know, we have these guys that are sitting in the minors just killing AAA, crushing AAA with an opportunity to come up and take some lumps. So, yes, the overall point I'm freaking just jabbering on now. But, yes, I want to see the trades happen. I would not be surprised if we were to actually improve once that happened.
I would agree with that. It's an interesting point you make. And the youth, the Yankees need more youth. Nothing drove that point home more than watching the All-Star game this year. If you guys listening have not read my blog from last Friday, the title was "The All-Star Game Depressed Me." And the reason was because it was pretty much the youngest All-Star game in history. 26 guys on each roster were 26 years or younger. There were guys like Bryce Harper, who was in his fourth All-Star game. The guy's only 23. Mike Trout's in his fifth All-Star game. He just turned 24. All the home runs were hit by guys who were 26 years or younger, and the AL had the youngest starting infield in history at 25.2 years old. So pretty much the field was filled with young superstars, and then you look over who are the Yankee All-Stars, and it's all guys who are older. I know Betances is only 28, but Miller and Beltran are both in their 30s, and those were free agent guys. So to me, I don't know about you, but watching the All-Star game, I loved watching it. I love watching guys, all those young guys, Bryce Harper, Trout, Giancarlo Stanton. But all it really made me think was, damn, I wish the Yankees had some of these guys.
It's when you look around and see the youth and how just, you know, overwhelming it is and how many young guys are there and how And you and I have talked about this so many times in the way that baseball is today. You go post steroid era, you take the PEDs out of the system, and what do? You throw it back to baseball being a young man's sport, because it is a tiring sport that you play every single day for the, like, it seems like three quarters of the year. These guys are going through a grind.
Well, it's a toll on your body.
Yeah,
when you factor in spring training, it pretty much is three quarters of the year. And if you make the World Series, it's 9 months out of the year you're playing baseball pretty much if you make the World Series.
And a lot of the young guys play ball outside that as well. Some of them playing in Caribbean leagues, or they play in fall leagues, the very young guys who are coming up. But anyway, the point being is that the old man of baseball is becoming obsolete. He's slowly becoming obsolete. Are we going to see guys who are going to be the exception to the rule? Yes, we are going to see those guys,
like,
because that's
David
always
Ortiz.
David Ortiz. Well, I'll say like Carlos Beltran. That's more the guy I'm thinking. He's a guy that has always hit for average. He's always been a gap hitter. He hits the ball out of the ballpark too, but he's always been he's line drive hitter. Those are the kind of guys that as they get old, you'll see probably sticking around a little bit. Your sluggers are not going to be sticking around like they have been. It's just not going to happen, because it doesn't happen. And when you see the amount of young guys in this team in the All-Star game, it's exciting, because that means baseball's in a better place. It's a more fun game to watch when it's young guys playing ball, because that's what it's meant to be. And, you know, slowly we're getting to that point. I understand that it's a terrible – right now our team is older, a hell of a lot older than a lot of people. But – you know, we're slowly getting to that point, and obviously I think Cashman understands this. I think Cashman's understood this for a few years now, and I think, you know, there's just been roadblocks for him. So,
and a lot of fans will say, well, the Yankees have guys coming up, Aaron Judge, Gary Sanchez, Greg Bird, Luis Severino. Yes, you're right. Those guys are better prospects than the Yankees have had in a number of years. But they are at the point, they're at 23, 24 years old. There was guys in the All-Star game who were 21 years old. So those guys are already superstars at the major league level. The Yankees prospects are not quite there. They're not quite that good. They could be very good, but they're not sure things. So let's just take all the opportunity we can get and actually make it a sure thing, or close to a sure thing. Trade Beltran, trade Chapman, trade Miller, get more young guys so you have a better chance at hitting the lottery, which is basically what it's like when you have a Mike Trout or a Bryce Harper.
Totally. That's it. That's what needs to happen.
Totally,
I mean,
bro.
I got nothing else that needs to happen. Let's make this work.
So, you know, the All-Star game, I thought it was a pretty good one. I do believe, though, it was the lowest rated All-Star game in a few years.
Yeah, I mean. I don't know how that – is that just the television ratings?
There's a few reasons. I think it's because, you know, the 90s and stuff – like you just said, gone are the days when 35-year-olds are batting cleanup in the All-Star game. But the thing is, when Barry Bonds is hitting cleanup in the All-Star game, he was hitting cleanup in the All-Star game for 10 straight years. So that name recognition is there, and people are tuning in to see him. Whereas now, you know, all these young guys that a lot of casual baseball fans have never heard of, they're just not going to tune in. Maybe if, you know, Bryce Harper's a superstar, Trout's a superstar, but do those guys really have the star appeal that all of those PED guys did? I'm not sure. I mean, I love them. You love them. But does the guy who watches maybe 20 of his team's games a year love them? Probably not.
And the other thing, I don't know how this is, how they throw this in there, how the Nielsen ratings, if that's still a thing, how they, you know, throw in, you know, looking at the game, if it's streamed online, if people are, you see a lot of younger people today that aren't maybe watching it on television, but they're following the game on Twitter, or they're following it on some other
event,
some kind of a social, you know, yes, a social
media event.
But I'm saying actually doing it, following it on Twitter, not watching the game themselves, just like looking at the comments, seeing what's happening, just kind of loosely following it. I don't know how much that takes into consideration, and I don't know how much that takes away from people watching it anymore, because they don't want to sit down and watch the game, but they'll just follow and see what happens.
I'm not quite sure if that really, you can factor that in, but
because how many people were actually watching the Snapchat of the behind the scenes from MLB doing it, or anybody who was covering it doing Snapchat, and you're seeing all these behind the scenes things, and you see half these guys probably Snapchatting on their phones, sitting there, you know, in the wherever around there, some of the reporters and stuff like that. I don't know how many people are doing that, or or you know, people are at the game, Snapchatting, things like that. Like, that's got to be a factor in it, because they're still watching. You're still getting behind the scenes. You're not watching every play. You're not doing it like that. You're watching the highlights, maybe, you know, an inning after it happens. I just got to believe that's got to really take down a lot of the viewership. But I don't know how much of a tick down is the interest.
It could just be also a little fluke, because I think the MLB playoffs last year, and especially the World Series, were one of the highest rated in recent history.
Yeah, I don't know. I just think it's really hard to gauge. That's kind of my point. I think it's hard to gauge the overall interest in, because there's so many outlets now and so many things to follow for a particular event.
Information overload.
It is. It's a lot.
I mean, and this is the worst time of year to be a sports fan, especially if your team is just looking to sell, because there's not really much going on. The NBA and NHL playoffs are over. We're just basically waiting for training camp of football so we can all start thinking about our fantasy football drafts. And all we've got is baseball on. And a lot of people are kind of just mentally checked out in the middle of July of the sports world.
At least they listen to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. We're not checked out. We're ready to go.
And that's when they will just tune in for a Doc and Daryl 30 for 30.
Did you watch that?
No, I didn't. I didn't get a chance yet. I have it on my DVR.
Yeah, it was interesting. There's a lot of I watched it. It was really well done. It was really, to me, it was kind of depressing watching Doc Gooden just does not look good. He looks like he's in bad shape. I don't know when exactly that was filmed, but it had to have been within the last 6 months.
Did you listen to the Daryl Strawberry Boomer and Carton interview?
Yes, I did.
Sometime last week. Yes, you can kind of tell, reading between the lines of how Strawberry was talking about Gooden, that he is still struggling with drug addiction.
Well, Strawberry, he runs a couple of different rehab clinics down Strawberry as well, so he sees it.
You got to give Strawberry all the credit in the world. He's got his life together. He had cancer. He was addicted to cocaine. He was addicted to crack. I mean, the dude has been through it all.
Yeah.
And he's bounced back, and he moved to Missouri, and he turned his life around. And awesome. Awesome for him. And one of his best, oldest friends, who I know he's not close with anymore, is still going through all the shit.
Yeah.
So it's got to be really tough. I'm really looking forward to watching it. I heard it was really good. But just the juxtaposition between Doc and Daryl is pretty amazing when, you know, 30 years later. And it's pretty crazy to think Strawberry, what the guy's been through. He was on the 86 Mets, the 96 Yankees. And right now he's still here, 2016, you know, turned his life completely around, fully healthy now. It's pretty an amazing life the guy's had.
The crazy thing is when you start hearing the accounts of what these guys were doing on a daily basis, I mean, so this, it's kind of leading me into a talking point that I want to get into. Maybe we could get into another time. Maybe it isn't the time, but this could be an off-season discussion. But the fact that in the mid-80s, they started in like 83, 84,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So at that time, like, that was the height of the Greenies era. And I think the Greenies era of baseball really gets overshadowed. It's completely under the radar, but there's a very big story about the Greenies era that really hasn't been told to the mainstream. And I don't think people really understand the effect of the Greenies on the baseball players, how it affected the game, and how it affected them as people. Because Daryl Strawberry was going through his account as when he would get up in the morning. It really started, if you think about a baseball player, they're nocturnal, right? They play baseball at night, so they got to get up for the game. These guys were young and hip and going out, popular. So they play their game. They'd go out. They'd drink all night long. Or if they were on the road and they weren't going out, they would drink to come down from the Greenies. Strawberry said he was taking sometimes at the peak up to 8 Greenies per day of these things.
He was wired 24 hours a day.
They're just going. He referenced the phrase of, if you're not playing on Greenies, and it was a known phrase in baseball, that you were playing naked. Because they all did it. And when he was talking about what the effect is, he was talking about the baseball just looking like a balloon, looking like a beach ball coming at you, because you're so locked in and you're like so hyper focused, because that's what it's for. It's a, you know, it's a neurological drug that just heightens
it's
your
like
senses.
It's like injecting caffeine straight into your blood vein.
Yeah,
24 hours a day.
But it's even a different. It's just more of a heightener. And the fact that these guys were the motion was, Greenies, 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 drink to come down so you can potentially sleep, get up, greenies to get back up again because you're hungover or you drank too much. And it was just a cycle. These guys got addicted to the amphetamines. They got addicted to the alcohol. While they were drinking alcohol to get back up during the alcohol, they were probably doing cocaine. They were doing all these drugs.
I was going to say, you forgot about the 8 ball of cocaine.
That kind of happened as they were drinking. And like it didn't happen immediately for a lot of these guys. So it was a vicious cycle at the time. And the Greenies started all of that to get kind of get them going. And that's what Strawberry really said he was addicted to. He was so addicted to the amphetamines that he couldn't live without them. And I don't know. To me, it's just fascinating listening to that and hearing how they got through the 80s and the 90s and how much alcohol and drugs they were doing while they were playing baseball. It's crazy. It really is. And, you know, I think maybe we can get into this more in the offseason because it's probably in a more appropriate time when things aren't as hot. But it's definitely a good conversation. I would like to do some more research on it and talk a little bit more, you know, intelligently about it. But, yeah, it's something that's fascinating.
I'm definitely interested in it as well. And it's you kind of feel bad, but at the same time you don't feel bad because they did piss their careers away. It's not like they – you know, got an illness. I know addiction is an illness, but
yeah, you got to be careful with that because
it is still, I think, on the onus of the person to,
oh,
to,
no doubt,
to be a stronger person. So I only have so much sympathy for them, but they were going to be a dynasty with the Mets and they won the one World Series and then everything just went to shit. So, and then they come back and win it with the Yankees, just a slap in the face to Mets fans, which is kind of funny.
It is kind of funny. when you look at early Doc Gooden tape, and I haven't really watched too much of it. Maybe I had a long time ago and just kind of forgot his motion and how much whip he had in that arm. It's unbelievable. Like, you watch this and they talk about how he literally would use his arm as a whip, and it was just the motion he had was unbelievable. How much velocity and torque he could generate in that arm. It was crazy. Yeah. The guy was really electric.
Pinpoint control with like a 97 mile an hour fastball, and then a Dellin Betances curveball.
Yeah,
at 78 miles an hour that he could drop at any point. Except he would go 9 innings doing
it. It was a rubber arm. He had a rubber arm.
It was insane.
Yeah, it's a fascinating thing. Definitely watch it. And if you haven't seen it out there, definitely check it out. It's really well done.
So pretty much what we're waiting for is the Yankees, you know, the trade deadline to see what the Yankees do. Just want to give a little PSA to everybody. don't be fooled by the trolls on the internet who are making fake Ken Rosenthal and Joel Sherman accounts, or the trolls who just tweet out that the Yankees have traded Andrew Miller and Ivan Nova for Joey Gallo.
Yeah, and they put Fox Sports 1.
Somehow you put in your bio that you're a Fox Sports 1. I still don't know how this person had 20,000 followers. That's what really threw me for a loop.
Yeah, I don't know. You could look back through those followers to see how many of them are legit. But the fact that she said that, I actually...
She? No way that is a she.
You never know. You just never know, because sometimes like there's a friend of a friend who knows somebody or whatever. And those type of people can do it. Usually they don't announce it like that. But doing my due diligence and just making sure, because I wanted the scoop if it was real. We DM'd a little bit back and forth so I could kind of feel this person out. And it was very clear that it was all very vague and bullshit.
Yeah.
And obviously
they even DM back though.
Yeah, they did. They followed a DM. They wanted, because they wanted us to blow it up and give them credit for it. That's why.
Yeah.
We don't do that unless we have, you know, a legitimate source, or if a major respected baseball writer says something about it who has a legitimate source.
All right. But, but humor me.
Yeah.
Joey Gallo for Andrew Miller and Ivan Nova. If that trade was actually real, how would you feel about that?
I wouldn't be mad, but at the same time, I think that Miller can get more than Gallo, I believe. I don't know. I don't think Gallo – I think Gallo has come up not as – I think Gallo's prospects aren't as high as they were a year ago. And
well, Profar is probably the preferred guy out of Texas.
And the fact that Miller's controlled leads me to believe that it just wouldn't be that deal. There'd be more to it.
You can forget about Ivan Nova. That's a nothing.
Yeah, that was a throw-in.
It's basically it would be Gallo.
But that's like telling me that Joey Gallo is more than Miller, and you got to throw somebody else in, which doesn't make
sense. I just don't fully discard it as an unfair trade.
No, I don't think it's an unfair trade. If I was in a fantasy football league or a fantasy baseball league, and that came across, I would not veto it.
But replace Chapman for Andrew Miller, and I don't think that gets done. I think the Rangers would trade trade Joey Gallo in exchange for Aroldis Chapman.
No, because I think at that point you need to add some more minor leaguers to it to make it.
Because so it's not far off from what the trade for actual Joey Gallo would be. It's some combination of maybe Chapman plus another Yankees, you know, minor leaguer, not a big name, or Andrew Miller and for Joey Gallo plus a little something from the Rangers.
Some lower minor league guys.
It's some, but that is not that unrealistic. And
no, I agree.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't have been thrilled, but I would have probably been, you know what? If Cashman has evaluated the fact that he likes Joey Gallo and that's the move he wanted to make, fine. My only thing was that I didn't believe it because I knew the Yankees are not going to make any moves until after they get absolutely trounced in these next 11 games.
The only thing about Gallo for me is I understand he's a young guy. He's got a lot of power. He's got special power, right? That's what is being told. But he strikes out a lot.
What the hell does that mean?
I don't know. He hits Schwarber has special power, right?
That is special.
Okay, so that is special.
I think Joey Gallo does have
legitimate major league power.
What we saw Giancarlo Stanton do at the Home Run Derby is special power.
Okay, fine. Joey Gallo to me it still fits that mold of base of the type of baseball that I'm not a really big fan of, and it's kind of an all or nothing for. Although you know the fact that he's young and you know he may really improve on. He may cut down his strikeouts. He may get on base more as a major league hitter as he matures and grows into to a better hitter in the major leagues. That can all come. I understand that. So he's an exciting player, and it would be a positive for the Yankees.
Versatile player who can play a lot of positions, and he's young, and that's exactly what the Yankees need.
And he's major league ready.
All the reports by everyone has been that the Yankees are not trading Andrew Miller unless they're blown away. And I don't think Joey Gallo would blow them away.
I agree.
So I honestly don't expect Andrew Miller at this point to get traded unless a team wants to get stupid. And hey, take advantage if a team wants to get stupid. But
I could see a team getting stupid. I mean, I really could.
As we get closer to, you know, July 30th, July 31st. And maybe, you know, teams tend to get stupid when other teams in their division or in the wild card race are making moves. They tend to get stupid because they don't want to fall behind.
That is very true. You start seeing a couple of these guys, a couple teams. This is my scenario that I'm looking at. I'm looking at the Nationals making a move, making themselves a lot better. The Mets making a move, making themselves a lot better. And the Cubs going like, oh shit, we got to go right now. These teams are all around us getting good. We have a window that cannot be closed. We need to take advantage of this window right now. I've talked about this with you. The fact that Theo Epstein has already done that one time in Boston, he knows damn well what happens before and what happens after and how much of a hero you are if you get that one championship.
I mean, Theo you pencil him into the Hall of Fame. You could probably pencil him into the Hall of Fame.
But he needs to get it now, and he knows that. Because of Boston. Yeah. He knows that.
He would legitimately you could make an argument he's the greatest GM of all time if he ends the Red Sox and the Cubs curses.
And guess what? Guess who's doing nothing for them in 2016? And that's why I think the value is everybody's talking about
Schwarber?
How Schwarber for Miller is completely out of line. And to me, I look at that. I don't think it is because
– I said it's not completely out of line. I think
I think you and I are on the same page. I think it's still a little iffy, but it's not out of line. But some people are like, oh, that's crazy. Why would they give up Schwarber for a reliever? Well, it's a reliever that puts you over the top as a team.
I mean, it's the best reliever in baseball over the last 2 years.
He's controlled, and Schwarber's doing nothing for you this year because he's down. And now you need to strike. You can't strike next year. You need to strike now.
I think it would take more than just Andrew Miller to get Schwarber, but I don't think it would take a lot more than just Andrew.
No, there's a framework there, and those two would be the top.
Right. And I would be so down with that, as we mentioned in previous episodes. And regardless of whether or not Andrew Miller gets traded, I would be absolutely livid if come August 1st, the night of August 1st, if Chapman and Beltran are still in Yankee pinstripes, I'm going to be extremely pissed off.
I will be.
Guys are going to do nothing for you next year. If you really love Aroldis Chapman, which I don't think anyone really loves Aroldis Chapman, he's great. He's good, and he can throw the ball really fast, but he's not as good as Miller or Betances. But if you really want Aroldis Chapman on the Yankees next year, can say, we're going to trade you, and then we're gonna sign you in the offseason.
And even if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But you can still go after him. You don't know he's going to sign with you if you keep him. It doesn't matter. What happens right now while he's in pinstripe, if he stays with the team or doesn't stay with the team, it's not going to matter who signs him. I have a feeling that it has zero bearing on what he's going to make his decision on. What is he going to be like? Oh, they were loyal to me. I'm going to re-sign with them. No, whoever gives him the biggest contract, shows him the biggest opportunity, that's where he's going to go. Let's all be honest with that.
The biggest pile of money is going to get Aroldis Chapman.
It means nothing what happens at the end of this year. Nothing.
And I've heard the argument that the Yankees can have they can justify to themselves for keeping Beltran and Chapman, because then they can say, we'll let them walk and get the compensation draft picks.
I've heard that too, which is something to talk about at least.
Look at the history of Brian Cashman drafting in that area, which would be right after the first round. It's not that great. It's certainly not. I would rather take my chances with somebody who's already played pro ball for a year or two, and you have at least some numbers to go on, and you have some actual people who have watched him play in pro ball, whatever prospect that may be for any organization, whether it's the Nationals or the Giants, right, or whatever team you're trading with. I'd rather take that guy than a fresh draft pick.
Not to mention, if the Yankees are always talking about putting out a winner, putting out a team that's consistently going to compete for a title or a division, when you're doing that, you're also setting yourself back by 2 years, 3 years.
Right.
You know, at the least.
Draft picks in baseball take a little while.
Right. Unless you're a pitcher, unless you're a guy who just blows you away. But are you really going to get that guy at the end? I mean, I know Mike Trout was 17, 18?
Mike Trout is an anomaly. Such an outlier.
I understand that. That's what I'm saying. That's my point. It doesn't happen. So the fact is that they're not going to get that type of guy at that position. And when you can already get a guy that's relatively proven in the minor leagues, who's well ahead of any guy out of high school or any guy out of college, then you should absolutely do that. And it doesn't matter if he walks. If you're getting that, if you're comparing those two, if you're talking about the draft pick and that's your argument, well, your argument is blown out of the water if this guy is re-signed and we get a player that's ready to contribute. It's blown out of the water. It makes no sense.
Yeah, and if the Yankees want to re-sign Chapman after they trade him away,
you can re-sign Beltran if you want.
It costs them nothing. No, God, no.
I'm just saying, you could.
So here we go. We got more older free agents. But what I'm saying is the Yankees, when you sign a free agent of that caliber, you have to surrender a draft pick. But you wouldn't have to with Chapman because he wouldn't be on the other team long enough. So it's really like cost the Yankees nothing to sign him in the offseason if they trade him. It only benefits them. They could get players in return and get the player back after they re-sign him. And you know what? I don't even really need to re-sign Aroldis Chapman.
Yeah, it's a toy. The thing, when we heard about this deal, when this deal was going down, this was kind of a contingency that you and I were talking about as well. It was an alternate benefit because if the Yankees were in a situation, I remember us talking about this, if they're in a situation where they're at the deadline and they're ready to sell, or they're not in competition or deem themselves not in competition, we mentioned this was another positive signing by Brian Cashman, saying that he is going to set himself up because guess what they're going to do? They're going to clamor over this guy at the trade deadline. He is exactly what teams need at a deadline. There's a guy that puts you over the top in the bullpen. He's perfect. You can absolutely get high value for him right now. It's great. If Cashman does it, flips him into something great, genius move on Cashman. And you look at the signing, even more of a genius move.
You mean the trade? Yeah, the trade for Trout. You mean the trade for Chapman?
For Chapman, yes.
Yeah, absolutely. You gave up nothing for him. More stuff flying around is that the Pirates are maybe interested in Nathan Eovaldi. They're not the first team to show interest. The Cubs showed interest a couple months ago when Eovaldi was on that hot streak. Eovaldi has been relegated to the bullpen. Granted, he's looked pretty good in two outings out of the bullpen. I don't think that's really enough to go on. And whatever team trades for Eovaldi, I think, would probably think he would be a starter, not a reliever.
But He's a reliever. Did you see the new nickname that I made up?
No.
Oh, yeah. I have a new bullpen nickname now with Eovaldi out there. It's E equals BMC squared.
That's so nerdy. What were you just like sipping some scotch and then it just came to you?
I was in brutal honesty, I was drinking white wine and it came to me.
At least you weren't drinking rosé.
Yeah, that was white wine. It was a nice Sauvignon Blanc.
You get hopped up on white wine.
I know. It gives me the sugar I need to get me excited.
Behind the scenes stuff is a couple weeks ago we get on the podcast and Scott goes, man, I'm really tired, but I just chugged some white wine, so I'm good to go. Like, what the hell are you talking about?
I was like, I think I have a problem. I drank too much last night.
The only way I can
live right
now. Sugar. Like, why don't you just have a pixie stick if you're really that in desperate need for some sugar?
Because there was alcohol in it and it helps me, okay?
Listened you up. Got you ready for the pod.
I know. I need to be on Doc and Daryl.
Anybody have a Greenies hookup out there, let us know, and Scott and I will record the next podcast on some Greenies.
Yeah, we will tell
you what happens.
We'll document our experience to see how it helps podcasting.
All right. We already mentioned that the Red Sox got Pomeranz. And
don't send us greetings through the mail, though, because apparently every time we ask for something, it actually is sent through the mail. So don't do that. Just kidding.
We mentioned that the Red Sox got Pomeranz. And the reason I want to mention it again is because they gave up Anderson Espinoza, who was their number three prospect in their system. But he was 18 years old. 18 years old is so far away from the major leagues. So I think if I'm a Red Sox fan, I really love that move. It's a fills a need for this year and a need for the next couple years. You can argue that maybe Pomeranz isn't as good as the numbers he's pitching this year. You know, maybe he's not a 2.8 ERA or whatever he's pitched in San Diego. But even if he's a mid-3 ERA guy, I love that move. Dombrowski always favors the veterans over the prospects anyway. But if you're a Red Sox fan, do you like or hate that move?
I mean, I don't really know enough about the 18-year-old prospect. I don't know if he's a guy that people were getting hyped about. I'm not sure if that's the case. I mean, you look at their last prospect, the Henry kid. What was his name?
Henry Owens.
Henry Owens was their number one pro. This guy was the second coming, ready to come out and just, you know, drop that left hook like Clayton Kershaw style.
Yeah, and then
style.
He gets up to and the majors, he's throwing 88.
Yeah, he's been awful. So I don't know how much confidence they have in their brass actually bringing up pitchers at this point. So I don't know what the hype was around this 18-year-old kid.
Well, I did see someone was quoted as scout as saying he's a mini Pedro.
Okay. Well, I mean, it's really totally unfair to compare. They've also said that about Severino, but the fact that Palmer Granite is ready to go now is you know, this team, the one thing that they're lacking is pitching. Obviously their offense is filthy. If they add some pitching and become more consistent in pitching, it's a legitimate World Series contender. So you got to like it, I guess, if I'm a Red Sox fan, because it's trying to put them over in a really strong weakness that they have right now. And I don't expect Pomeranz to be as good as he was. He's in the NL West, which is just I don't even know where that is.
Pitching in Yosemite, so far away. In San Diego.
So you come into the AL East, you know, and these guys get a book on you. This guy's been bounced around. I mean, he's been on, what, four teams?
The Red Sox are his fourth team.
He was drafted by Cleveland, though. He was also drafted by Cleveland.
Okay, so he has bounced around a lot. Yeah, I mean, he's 27 years old. It's not like he's a really young guy. He's got two more years of arbitration before he's
kind of like a Nathan Eovaldi. Like, a lot of people bounce around. People have given up.
This is the first year he's really had a breakout season. And, is it because he's finally reached his potential, or is it, you know, pitching in San Diego, big ballpark, National League, no pressure? Get hot for a couple
months. Who knows? There's a lot of things. Anyway, whatever. It's a good gamble, in my opinion.
I agree.
Right now, because they're at a win right now mode with pitching, at least.
And if you're looking at the Red Sox pitching staff objectively, they've got David Price, who you think you can count on. And other than that, you got a lot of question marks. Yeah. Stephen Wright has been fantastic, and he was an all-star, but he's a knuckleballer. And what's the one thing we know about knuckleballers?
500.
Exactly. Eventually, the numbers, you pitch enough as a knuckleballer, you're going to end up somewhere around 500. So
unless you play the Yankees.
I would guess Stephen Wright is going to come back down to reality a little bit in the second half. So adding another pitcher is only a good thing. But yeah, it didn't really matter when he went up Friday night against the Yankees. I knew that was going to piss me off. I tweeted out before the game that Stephen Wright versus Michael Pineda in the first game back from the All-Star break has the potential to really piss me off. That's exactly what it did. Stephen Wright was only in trouble in one inning. The Yankees scratched a couple runs off him, but by that time it didn't matter because Pinata already gave up a couple home runs. Yep. One to Ryan Hannigan, one to Travis Shaw. I mean, we just have been praising the Red Sox lineup, but you can't be giving up home runs to the number 8 and number 9 hitter.
Yeah, those are the guys you don't give up the runs to. To freaking Ryan Hannigan. I mean, he's on there for defense. He's not there to hit the ball. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's inexcusable the mistakes that he makes. It's just, it makes no sense either. It's crazy. It's like he like takes some people off. And the other thing about Stephen Wright that was bothering me, and I don't know if I'm less bothered after listening to Paul O'Neill talk about the way that they would prepare for knuckleballers, because we've heard stories about Steinbrenner bringing in knuckleballers to pitch bullpen. Batting practice before they would go against knuckleballers. And Paul O'Neill was talking about that it really didn't help them out because it's not really a timing thing. It's just because it dances so much. You just got to be ready and good hand-eye coordination, ready to hit the ball. And the fact that you have that long break, you know there's a knuckleballer coming at you. You're not facing like a 96, 97 mile an hour lefty beforehand. I don't know. I feel like you could be more prepared for that guy. And they just weren't good. And it was frustrating for me seeing them get baffled by this guy again. And I don't know.
Stephen Wright reminds me a lot of Tim Wakefield. And
he throws the ball a lot harder, though. His fastball is in the high 80s.
Yeah, but I don't honestly think that makes a difference because he doesn't throw his fastball.
He does. He does throw his fastball. Okay.
Yeah, just like Tim Wakefield did. If he fell behind 3-0, yeah, you're going to get a fastball. But
Stephen Wright throws it in non-traditional knuckleballer counts as well. He has an almost legitimate fastball. I mean, I think it's 88, 89 miles an hour. It's not a freaking get me over fastball.
So
he's a little bit different.
He's a little bit different. But what I was really getting at is that, like you were saying, you can't prepare for a guy like Tim Wakefield or Stephen Wright. So it all really matters is the knuckleball dancing or not. And you just got to be selective with it and hit it. You know, the one time the Yankees scored runs was Beltran's RBI double, and it's when the knuckleball stayed belt high. So
and it was Carlos Beltran.
And it was Carlos Beltran. So I am at the same – while I'm pissed off that you can't hit a knuckleballer, it's a fluke. It's a fluke pitch. It's a it's a gimmick, and that's what it is. And
except that we can never hit it, ever.
Well, this team can't hit anything. And I was in the stadium on Friday night, and there was a slight buzz to the atmosphere pregame. You know, I went to get a couple drinks at Billy's, walking into the stadium. Everyone was excited, first game back. Tons of Red Sox fans there, which, you know, I think it was almost split, which is kind of disappointing to see. But Pineda just completely sucked the air out of the stadium. And to be honest with you, after the third or fourth inning, a lot of people were just walking around getting drinks and not really paying attention. And it just seemed like Yankee fans were uninterested, which is almost worse than if they were just booing the hell out of the team.
Well, I mean, it's the overlying theme of what this season is. It's, you know, we know that there's a bomb waiting to go off. You know, we're waiting for the disruption to happen when Pineda's pitching. We know there's going to be that inning where he's going to give it up. He's going to start flailing his arms, and you know, everybody's going to shut down. It happens all the time. It's too consistent. It's consistently inconsistent, and it pisses everybody off. So yeah, they're trying to do other things. They're trying to enjoy their night. Why wouldn't they? It's ridiculous. And the fact that ownership doesn't acknowledge these things makes people even more angry.
And then Eduardo Rodriguez, who has sucked all year, he's got an ERA north of 7, went out and shut down the Yankees. And you and I looked it up before this podcast started. 5 career starts for Eduardo Rodriguez against the Yankees. 31 innings, 2.01 ERA, 29 hits given up, so less than a hit per inning, and he's 4-1. The Yankees can't hit lefties over the last few years. Eduardo Rodriguez, I know, was high prospect for the Red Sox. They got him in the Andrew Miller trade, but he has not been good all year, and the Yankees could not take advantage. And now, as we're recording this, I'm watching. The Yankees are down 1-0. Tanaka ended up giving up a home run to the short one, Dustin Pedroia, early in the game.
So he's gone back to his old ways and giving up solo shots. I'm okay with that.
Solo shots are better than 3-run shots, I guess. All right, let's get into some mailbags before we close this show out. We got a couple from Instagram, so let's fire through these quickly. The first one comes from BT.34 on Instagram, and he says, what are the chances that the Yankees make a blockbuster trade at the deadline? We've already talked about the number of trade possibilities, but blockbuster trade, I think, would be trading Beltran, Chapman, or Miller. Would you agree?
Do I think that's a blockbuster? I think you're going to add – to me, a blockbuster is more to it. I think there would be more minor league guys involved. I don't know. A blockbuster seems like a more people.
Major. Unless one of those three guys are traded, I don't think it's a major trade. Unless something crazy happens and the Yankees somehow offload, you know, Jacoby Ellsbury.
Yeah, see, that would be a blockbuster to me.
Okay, so what would you put the chances at percent-wise?
Of an Ellsbury type thing, like
something crazy happening at the deadline. Cashman pulls something out of his ass and surprises everyone.
25%.
That's higher than I thought. I would put it at like 7.94%.
That just doesn't make any sense. I have a lot of respect for Cashman. I feel like he's a sneaky, crafty guy, and I could see him doing something like that. It's because it's the Cashman factor to me.
This one comes from sports_edits_27WC. Do you think the Yankees will finish above 500 if they trade Miller and or Chapman?
And this is something we talked about earlier in the show. I could absolutely see some scenario playing out where we get younger guys who are major league ready, filtering them in, popping up some of our younger guys from AAA, and this team playing better. So yes, I could see it happening.
I don't think the Yankees are going to finish 500 whether they trade those guys or not. So that's just my feeling on the team so far. All right, next question comes from Robin Lett, and he says, "Hey guys, I'm having a hard time getting on board with the idea that we should be sellers, particularly with regard to the bullpen big three. The arguments for a trade in that department have been centered around the Yankees giving themselves a chance to contend in 2017 and 18. It seems to me that given the makeup for our roster and the lack of starting pitching in the free agent market this offseason, we need to be hanging on to those guys. The reason everybody wants them is because they are world class, with the likes of Judge, Sanchez, and Bird adding to the offense next year, and along with big money coming off the books in the next 18 months, we should be building a team around BMC. Those guys, along with Didi and Castro, could be the core 5 to 6 guys for this team in the next few years. Love to hear your thoughts, and great show as always." And the reason that I really wanted to read this is because it's different from what we think, and it's a different opinion than what a lot of people think.
Well, it's just something that's really not been thrown out there, so it's a little bit intriguing to at least talk about and think about. And I think a lot of it was, if you look at the makeup of this team and the fact that they did this, I mean, in essence, these guys were kind of trying to do that this year. They were trying to build around BMC this year, and they were alluding to the fact that, hey, we're going to shorten the game, and we're really going to lock it down in the end. And that was one of their big points, their big selling points, and why this team was going to succeed this year. And we saw what happens when you try to build a team when you go from the ninth inning back. It just doesn't work, because while it's nice to have those guys back there, if the people in front of you, the starters, the offense, the defense, everybody in front of you that happens for the first 6 innings, if they don't do their job, then the thing that you're building yourself, your team around, doesn't exist. It has no bearing on a game. It has no benefit on the game. It does nothing for that team. So I don't think you can actually build yourself around that, because to me, you need to have a lot more balance, and you need to really focus on the front end of the game rather than just the back end.
Also, building around BMC would be a play for only 2017 and 18, and I would rather see them make a play for 2017 for the next 10 years. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Is that, well, Betances, Miller, and Chapman are only going to be good for the next handful of years. So I don't want to build around them. I want to build around a core young group of players that'll be contributing to their success over the next 10 years.
Well, and the fact of the matter is the big part of that, Chapman, you can still re-sign if you trade him, that we talked about. So the fact that you would be keeping him to build around that, well, if you want to do that, fine. But trade him now, get him back, and reap more benefits, and then you'd be okay with that.
And it's just not very likely that the Yankees are going to win the pennant next year.
A lot of things can happen in a year.
I know a lot of things can happen, but I just it seems very far-fetched at this point. So unless something crazy happens, I would rather move on from the bullpen big three. Keep two of them if you really, really want to, but make sure you trade one and get something good for them. I would really want them to trade two. And Brian Cashman has found guys in the bullpen to fill. I think I mentioned this on a couple weeks ago. Think about all the good players since Mariano Rivera left, all the great bullpen arms. I have confidence Brian Cashman can find a couple more bullpen arms when the team is ready to win a World Series.
Last one is from Alex. He says, "How do we suggest that we Yankee fan, or how do you suggest that we Yankee fans can best unite to express directly to the Yankees ownership that the clear majority of the fans, especially good paying frequent ticket holders, want a rebuild ASAP?" He says, "Should we get a petition going? I know there's a lot of social media outlets. Set up a website or a Facebook page." He says, "You both clearly are quite creative and knowledgeable about the Yankees organization, so I trust you have some good ideas in this." You know, it's an interesting way to think, but the fact that our, if we were to, you know, rise up together and band together and show them what we think, that would make a difference. But in all honesty, I just don't think that's anywhere realistic. I don't think that a petition would be even seen. I don't think that if it were seen, that it would be used as any credibility. I don't think that they would just look at it and say, "Hey, these guys are fans. They don't know baseball like we know baseball. and it would relatively, it would just get dismissed. I just don't think it's a big consideration, in all honesty, in what they do.
So I got a little tipsy on Friday night, and I went down to the suite level, started banging on some doors. No one answered. So I started to get escorted out of the stadium, and I realized that I was not going to get to speak to Brian Cashman or Hal Steinbrenner. So unfortunately, I was not able to get the job done on Friday. But maybe if on August 1st and no one has been traded on the Yankees, we just decide to unite as Yankee fans and not go to the game.
Yeah, because that's going to happen. I mean, yeah, I mean, something drastic like that. But the problem is, I just don't think it's at a point where I don't think it's a realistic. It's very difficult to do something like that with a sports team.
Because, I know, I'm only kidding.
No, I know. I'm talking to Alex at this point, I think. But it's just very difficult to do that with a sports team because there are so many people doing their job at an upper level that are the only thing that they worry about from us is, like you said, going to the games, watching the games on television. But and unless that were to stop, which would be an insane movement, it's not going to matter.
It's never going to stop. But if this team continues to play mediocre and no one gets traded, the ratings are going to suffer and the attendance is going to suffer. So even though it's not going to be zero, if there's 5%, 10% less ratings and 2,000 to 3,000 less fans on a nightly basis, that hits the bottom line. That's a mess sending a message, even if you didn't mean to. That is sending a message to ownership.
Well, and the other thing is, if you listen to any of the sports radio stations in New York and you listen to a lot of these shows, I mean, Francesa is one of them as well, who's been harping on this for weeks. You know what the fan voice is. You know what everybody wants. You listen to these callers and you take any questions about the Yankees. I'd say 95% of them are talking about selling the team. The ownership at least know, they catch wind of this. I mean, I'm sure there's interns, you know, making notes for what's happening on some of these shows so they can get back and they know about what's going on, at least so they can, you know, knock down doors or whatever. But at the same time, I think the general overlying theme and the message that Yankee fans are okay with the rebuild and they want to rebuild, I do actually believe that that's a clear statement out there. I don't think it's something that's not known. So I think that
Levine doesn't know about it.
Well, I don't know if he voices about it, but I'm sure he knows about it. I don't think
that guy's ever heard of Twitter.
The problem is there's too many people talking about baseball in upper management that shouldn't be talking about baseball. And you're sending mixed signals, and it's confusing for us, and it just shouldn't happen. There should be a unified voice for baseball activities in the Yankees organization, and it should be Brian Cashman.
Listen,
and if somebody else is going to talk about it, Joe Girardi. Those are the two big guys that we should be talking about.
The Yankees are never going to be the Minnesota Twins, though they're going to win, you know, 70 games this year. They're never going to be the Braves, who traded everybody on their roster and they're fielding a 4A team at this point.
And that's not what we want.
No, let me finish. And they're not even going to be the Cubs, where the Cubs absolutely stunk for 10 years. That's never going to happen either. But is it really that unrealistic to think that maybe for half a season, the Yankees might just not be relevant and you can build for the future? That's okay.
It's a pretty small rebuild, retool
time. It's a pretty small price to pay.
It's not even a rebuild. Yeah.
It's a small price to pay if it means we're going to have that much better of a team from 2017 to 2027.
Hey, look, we're throwing good juju out there when we're talking about the 96 team, 20 years to the day where the core four started. Everybody, you know, there was a couple years before that when it really started. But like there's good juju going out there right now by this 96 series. So we're doing our part with the karma. We're trying to throw some as much of this, of the good vibes from 96 so that they can, you know, be pushed onto the ownership and pushed onto the field for this team, because we do have a young core that looks to be ready to go. And
you know what's
that's
crazy?
Exciting.
If they trade some guys and have some young guys on this team in the second half, you and I are going to start doing positive shows, and I'm going to start doing positive Friday blogs.
It would be fun. It would be fun to see that.
Oh, I'll genuinely be more excited for this team than watching 38-year-olds suck.
100%. Not even a factor.
All right. You guys can follow us on Twitter at Yankees Podcast. That is our new podcast Twitter page. We tweet out all of the show stuff. We'll be doing some clips over the next couple weeks from the shows. We get some mailbag questions from there, so definitely follow the show. You can follow me on Twitter at Yankees_talk. You can get Scott at Scott Reinen or at Bronx Pinstripes, which I'm sure everyone's already following, but Scott is usually tweeting from there. All right, Scott, before we leave, anything you want to leave the people with?
This is the stretch. This is exactly what we've come down to. So we'll see what happens. But be ready to sell, because I do believe this team is going to sell. And I think they may actually sell more than than what's expected. So I could see some people being surprised at how much Brian Cashman gets to do his job finally.
As I said on Friday night, I tweeted out a little video. Yes, the Yankees lost, but that's one game closer to selling. And that is not such a bad thing. All right, guys, we'll talk to you next week.
Hey, guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.